What's good? We are back live from Vietnam. I'm the one and only Paul Masson, and we about to bring on a special guest. You know how I do. I like to go digging in the crates for my interviews and, you know, kind of bring some cats on that people might be, you know, forgetting about and overlooking right now. So we're going to bring on a special guest, the one and only Mr. Lin from Company Flow.
Peace, peace. What's going on?
I'm doing good. How you doing tonight, man?
All right, man. As long as this cast ain't forgetting about me, man. You know what I mean?
I definitely ain't, man. I definitely ain't. So I'm gonna start with a basic question.
All right.
Like, who or what got you into DJing?
The first person I ever heard mix was my dad. He wasn't an actual DJ though, but like he did this mix for me, like 6 days before I was born. So like coming up, that was like the first things that I would ever listen to was this 8-track that he made. So like I would listen to this over. But like, you know, he found a way to blend or fade between songs. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. With just the this 8-track recorder. It was like, you know, it's brilliant, and like it was just smooth as hell and it was funky. So like that's what I grew up on. Like that's what really got me into like wanting to DJ.
Now, how much longer, like after you started DJing, did you start producing?
It's hard to say. Because like I played instruments. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So like you always have like music in your head, and like, you know, you make up things, you record some things every now and then. But like it's like when people say production, I'm guessing you mean like things that actually went out, like not long, man, like because like it's all part of it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you, at least for me, it was all part of it, you know what I'm saying? So like you come across a break record and you're like, hey man, this is the drums for such and such. So now, like, you know, you start off trying to recreate a beat and then it never comes out right and you end up making your own beat, you know what I'm saying? It might sound kind of trash, and you know, I guess the real question is, when did I get good?
Yeah.
when did I make something that was worthy of coming out? And that's not
so. You and LP founded a group in like 92, it says, and it says y'all met each other where you were hired as a DJ at a birthday party. Like, how did that lead to y'all forming Company Flow?
So he was signed to this label called Libra.
Okay.
I was interning, one of the owners of Libra was a manager, and I was interning for the management company. And he was like, yo, I got this dude who wants to be in a group, and he's a DJ. And it was around the time of his birthday. It was gonna say like around March. And he was like, yo, you know, both their birthdays around the same time. He was like, this was his way of getting me to DJ the party for free. I was just meeting LP for the first time. So like L was just like, yo, who's this dude that's about to DJ my party? You know what I'm saying? So like we're meeting each other, but like, oh boy, like the dude that was running it, like, you know, found a way, like he's like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna get you a DJ for free. But like, you know, it was LP's birthday party, and like that's where you know, we connected.
So then it says LP met Big Juss, y'all guys formed the trio. Mm-hmm. Y'all drop an EP called Fun Crusher. Mm-hmm. What, like, who came up with that name, and what's the meaning behind that name?
So it's kind of like a sort of an inside joke. basically, we were saying like, you know, like the kind of music that was popular at the time, everyone considered it to be fun, you know, and here we were like the guys that was a little left of that, you know. So like, you know, we were like, yeah,
I get it now. So y'all were kind of going against the fun. Y'all crushing fun.
Yeah, you know, it really makes sense when I believe it's 8 Steps. I'm sick of your corny beats and your crowd involved hooks because I'm a thinker. Evil Ain't is letting off stinkers. Like that is basically like the philosophy and like the energy behind like Fun Crusher.
Now, what was the process for you guys getting exposure back then?
man. Back then, you really had to you had to pound the concrete, man. You know, like you had to go to radio stations. You had to meet DJs where they were. At the time, I was working at Jive in the dub room, so like I had access to some people. But yeah, man, it was you're not sitting around sending out MP3s, you know, to you know, like to mass emails, like
yeah.
You're spending a little bit of bread to get tapes made, or like, you know, you're getting promo vinyl pressed, and like, you know, you're trying to get it to as many people as you can, as well as sell what you can, try and make some money back.
Now, y'all had a bidding war, it said, for y'all guys when y'all were on, I guess y'all were on Libra, and then y'all decided to sign with Ruckus. Like, what was the thought process on like waiting?
It wasn't really a thought process on waiting as much as, yeah. You're kind of regrouping, you know,
okay. When
things go sour with the first label, you know, like, yeah, okay, well, what is our plan now? You know, what is the point of what we're doing? And it was funny when it's Libra with Juvenile Techniques at the time, it's really just me and L. Company Flow really starts off me and LP.
Okay.
And then Just comes in later. So like, you know, it's after Juvenile Techniques, we were like, all right, you gotta think about like what are we doing now? Like, you know, what's the point of, you know, you're leaving an indie label, you know what I'm saying? Like, are you trying to get signed? Are you trying to do this yourself? You know? And we ended up doing it ourselves, and then got distribution deals rather than signing to labels.
Okay. So when you were with Ruckus, that was just a distribution deal?
Yeah. Ruckus distributed official recordings.
And now you followed up the EP with basically an LP with more songs, correct?
Yeah, so the EP was 8 songs, and then we added songs for Fun Crusher Plus.
Yeah, Fun Crusher Plus. Yeah. Now, what was the thought process behind that? We actually had a group in Fayetteville that did that. One of the biggest group, actually the group that mentored J. Cole, that's how they did back in the days. They dropped the EP and they dropped the LP, which was the same songs in the EP, but more songs in the LP. Like, what was the thought process behind that?
It was just that, you know, you're still pushing your original.
The original material?
Yeah. And like, you know, when we did this deal with Ruckus, we said, okay, well, you know, obviously we're not going to re-release the EP, but like what we'll do is we'll make it a full length because like, there's a lot of people that still wasn't up on the EP.
Yeah.
So like, you know, rather than like, you know, scrap it, or not really scrap it, but like, you know, act like it's not there and then do something new, just add on to it. So like now everyone's caught up, everyone's on the same page.
And I think that was genius, because my next question is about my favorite song from y'all, man, is the 8 Steps to Perfection. To this day, I think it's one of the most unique hip-hop sounds. How'd you discover that sound, man? And do you feel like that set the tone for the direction of the album?
Well, L did that beat.
Okay.
Like, sound-wise, like, I don't think it... I guess for a lot of people, it defined our sound. For us, we was just trying to make dope shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So
like, it wasn't like we were trying to like, okay, this is going to be the Cold Flow sound. And it was just like, and that beat was dope, right? You know what I'm saying? Because like, that beat don't sound like Crazy Kings, and it don't sound like In the End Burner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're doing all kinds of different stuff, you know?
Yeah, I love that song though, man. Like every time I was listening to it like all this week, man, last week, and I just, it still seems unique today, you know what I'm saying, when I listen to it. Now, your album cover, you had like aliens on the cover. Did that cover have something to do with like your futuristic sound on the album?
So the original EP that Fun Crusher, we flipped it. Sometimes the goblin, sometimes the alien, depending on like how we feel. But originally we called it the goblin.
Okay.
the Fun Crusher Goblin was done by another roommate of LP's at the time. When we did the full length, we were able to get Matt Du to do a version of it. So if you look in the center of Fun Crusher Plus, mm-hmm. you'll see he did a version of the original Alien on its knees.
Okay.
In around it now is the world that Matt Du built around it. Then on the flip side was a graph piece done by Ewok. The graph piece originally was going to be the cover.
Okay.
But because we were able to get in touch with Matt Du, who was already doing album covers and had just done Organized Confusion, the Extinction Stress album.
Okay. I know what you're talking about.
The Extinction Agenda, yeah. He did that cover. So we were like, yo, you know, this is...
Yeah, and that was a pretty animated cover, too. I remember that cover.
Yeah.
So, what was the reaction you were getting from people when they listened to Fun Crusher Plus album at that time? And do you feel like that album, like, changed hip-hop at that time? Because I know in Fayetteville, it changed the way the hip-hop heads went for just producing and just the sounds and things of that nature.
I don't know if I'm... I'm not in a place to say that it changed hip hop.
Yeah,
it changed hip hop for me because like I'm in this group, and like now I'm traveling, you know what I'm saying? And like people want to hear me scratching, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, it changed hip hop for me because like I realized like, oh, like I actually can do this. You know what I'm saying? Like it's no longer just me around my way and like, you know, my friends like, hey, you know, sound good. Like now it's like, oh, like. People in Germany said I sound good. You know what I'm saying? So like it's a whole other thing. How people received it, I honestly, but like I'm one of the people, I only pay attention to people that like me.
Okay.
You know I don't know. Like I'm sure people hated it, but like, I wouldn't know. You know what I'm saying? Like I only like, if you was giving me a, you know what I'm saying? Hey man, you know what I'm saying? You was my people then. So like I only paid attention to people that liked it. If you played it, you know what I'm saying? Like, so those are the DJs that like I ended up getting cool with. You know what I'm saying? Because like it's like I'm conceited. You know what I'm saying? Like I know people want to be humble with like with my music, bro. Like this is me. You know what I'm saying? Like, so like I'm proud of it. I love it. So like, yeah, if you love it, then we people. You know what I'm saying? Like if you hated it, like you know, like we not enemies, but like I got no reason to talk to you. Like we got nothing to talk about, you know. So like
I could tell you in my city, which coming up, there was a lot of hip hop heads and they were all big on that album because it was just they never heard nothing like that before at that time, you know.
Yeah, and you know,
go ahead.
We didn't set out to be different.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like one of the things that me and L bonded over. I don't know if y'all remember the box. Remember you call up and you order video?
Yeah.
So like, you know, we would be at his crib sometime. And like, you know, we put on the box and we see like the videos that people are ordering. And like sometimes it was garbage. You know what I'm saying? Like you're basically sitting around waiting for a Black Moon video to come on. You know what I'm saying? So like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, we bonded over like hating some of the same garbage. You know what I'm saying? So like, you know, like we just were kind of going in the same directions. Like we didn't set out to be different. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, nah, this is just what we're on, you know?
Now, when Big Just decided to go solo, was there like any ill will or was it just like he felt like doing his own thing?
He was always supposed to do his own thing. That's why on the album, like those guys have solo songs.
Yeah.
It was always like, you know, kind of. What happens though is like people got introduced to the three man.
Uh-huh.
But like it's not like we can explain to you this one guy is gonna he's gonna go off and do his own thing, you know. Like people just like, hey, it's LP, Big Justin Len. You know what I'm saying? So like that's people how people know it. But CoFlow essentially is me and LP.
Now, y'all had relationship with Ruck is kind of disintegrated. Says the label was accused of neglecting the group's talent and being financially dishonest. And in what ways were they neglecting your talent? And did y'all ever regret signing that deal with them?
Well, neglecting the talent for me was this was the camel that the straw that broke the camel's back for me.
Yeah,
we were overseas, and instead of them sending us Fun Crusher promo stuff, they sent over Body Rock. Remember that song, Body Rock?
Most Def, right?
Taz, Q-Tip, and Most Def. Yeah. So like, they're sending over that stuff. So I was like, well, why would you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not even on the road with us.
So they wanted y'all to pass out and promote Body Rock joint?
That part, you know what I'm saying? That point, I don't know what they expected. I never, there's nothing for me to say to you because like, I'm in Europe, and you just sent me. You know what I'm saying? Like somebody else's
material to promote. That's crazy.
Yeah, so wherever we was, like, we just left it there because like I'm not gonna carry around like I love those guys, you know what I'm saying? But like
Yeah, I get it.
I really don't give a shit about that record. Like I'm carrying my records and like whatever almost you know. So like that for me was kind of like egregious.
It is. That's disrespectful as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so like, you know, and like is it back then? I don't know if it was a mistake. You know what I'm saying? Like, all I know is, bro, I'm in Europe, and this is not me. You know what I'm saying? Like, you said, other people. Financially, like, you know, I'm not, I really don't get into business talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, publicly, because like,
just
on GP, like, it's especially now, like, it really don't make a difference. Like, that was more than a decade ago.
But that is totally crazy. I mean, I never heard nothing like that. Somebody sending another artist's material for a different artist to promote it. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And well, it's funny, like, you know, because you're at a record store, like, you know, you're at this signing, and like these Body Rock things come out. So, but fans don't care.
Yeah.
Like they're bringing me this thing. And they're like, I know it's not you. So, like, you know, I'm putting, you know, bubbles like, this is not Mr. Landon. You know what I'm saying? Like, but like, yeah, it's, you know, that to me was one of the wackest things they did.
Yeah, that seems like your diehards were just supporting anything that you were, you know, still passing out just because they're diehards.
Right.
So you and LP decided to go separate ways. I mean, y'all, there wasn't no issues with y'all, right? Y'all was it just life going two different directions?
Yeah.
Now, you started Dummy Smack Records. Now, how'd you come up with that name?
Dummy Smack was something we used to do when we was kids.
You know, okay.
When I say something stupid, you know, you smack them. It was.
Is that a New York thing? Dummy Smacks.
I don't know. Maybe it was just something I was doing because, like, people like, I remember people playing it. I remember playing it.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was something he was doing in my projects. I don't know. Like, because when you're a kid, like, you know, your whole world is what's happening in front of you, you know?
Yeah.
I just always liked the sound of Dummy Smack. Well, the sound of smacking someone, but also, like, the sound of, like, you know.
So, 2001, you dropped the album Pity the Fool, which is Mr. T's slogan. What can you tell us about that album?
That album was where I connected with a lot of people that I would end up working with consistently. So like Juggernauts, Gene Gray, Kaiser Course, Mr. Live, Mass Influence, Prince Paul, God Bless Don Newkirk. You know what I'm saying? Like we were all people that helped me out on that Q Unique, Destroy. Lord Sear, like these are all people that like a lot of people that was on that album, I still work with somewhat in some capacity.
And speaking of Prince Paul, that was going to be one of my questions. What is it like working with Prince Paul?
It's wild fun, bro. Like, it's Paul. You know, it's if you're a producer, like there's a side of you that is in awe. You know what I'm saying? Because you're like, I'm seeing like how the sandwich is, you know, saying how everything is made, you know. But then if you're working with him just like as a friend or like, you know, as like an artist, it's the one thing that I learned from Paul is you work with people that you wouldn't mind traveling with.
Okay.
You know?
That makes a lot of sense, especially if you're going to be touring and doing material with somebody. You don't want to be like Busta and Charlie Brown fist fighting before the show and after the show.
Right. So I look at some of the people that he was always working with, and like they were cool people, bro. Like Mr. Dead, Don Newkirk, Busta Bus. Who else? There's I forget my man, the Italian dude, the black Italian guy, man. Pop Master. He worked with Pop Master, bro. It's the work before the fun part, and then the work after the fun part that makes what Paul does genius.
You said dude's a black Italian.
Yeah, Pop Master. So if you listen to 3 Feet High and Rising, and he's on De La Soul Is Dead. You know Rufus the Moon, freaking lick him. That's Pop Master.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go check that out. That's crazy.
On one of the skits, they talk about, you know, oh, De La Soul is better than my mother's lasagna. Hey, it's like a big spaghetti. Hey. He does that. One of the De La skits. That dude's mad funny. He's wild funny.
So you formed a group with Kamani Rogers from the Masterminds named Roosevelt Franklin. So I'm guessing that group is named after Franklin D. Roosevelt?
No.
No? Okay.
Roosevelt Franklin was the Black Muppet from Sesame Street.
Wow. You learn something new every day.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day. That's crazy. I'm definitely going to have to research that. I swear I thought it was Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Yeah, nah. It's Roosevelt Franklin was the Black Muppet created by Matt Robinson.
Okay.
Matt Robinson is Holly Robinson's dad.
Yeah, I was so young back then. I don't remember like none of the names of the Muppets. I just remember the Muppets.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, they phased Roosevelt Franklin out pretty early. Like, he was like basically from the 70s.
Okay.
He was Black culture for a lot of us coming up.
I was born in 79. That's probably why I wasn't too familiar with it.
Okay. Yeah, like they might have phased them out by the time you were able to start watching Sesame Street. Yeah, I'm 75. So, like.
Wow, you 75?
Yeah, 1975.
Oh, you were born in 1975.
I'm 75 years old.
I mean, bro. You're 75. You don't look 75, dude, at all.
No, I'm not 75 years old. But yeah, I got like the Roosevelt Franklin records and all that. Like, you know.
Now, says you became a voice actor for American action comedy television series Kung Fao. Like, how did the opportunity come about?
Yeah, Kung Fu. Wow, what are you reading?
Kung Fu?
Yeah, is that on my wiki?
Yeah, that's on your wiki.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, Kung Fu was so I used to do voiceovers on this. The guy used to I feel like I'm stumbling over everything. He used to license old Kung Fu movies, like the joints we used to watch on Saturdays.
Okay.
They edit them down to like, you know, 22 minutes. And me, Sarah, Gene, Live, Sadat, Rock Raider, we would do voiceovers, yeah, like make a comedy.
So all y'all were working on that series, Sadat and Rock Raider 2?
Yeah.
And you said Gene, talking about Gene Gray?
Yeah. So like a lot of times, like Gene was Gene would narrate it because she's like, you know, basically like it wasn't like a lot of like female characters in a lot of these movies. So like there were like one or two. So we would have her narrate. A lot of times like because like they would have like a lot of guests in, so like I would do a bunch of voices, and then sometimes they would bring people in to redo the voices that like I was doing.
So I got a DJ question for you. We always talk about this. Like, so back in the days, you had, you know, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, mm-hmm. you know, Pete Rock and CL Smooth. A lot of times the DJ's names came first. You know, you got Kool G Rap and DJ Polo. You know, the DJ names were Showbiz and AG. Showbiz was first. You know, you always had the DJ names included. Why do you think DJs are like been basically excluded out of the group dynamic, or just even the rapper DJ duo dynamic?
Well, when hip hop goes corporate and the money comes in, right? The people at the label don't understand what the DJ is for.
Yeah. Like,
if he's just playing the records that's already a record, like, you know, why can't you just hit play on a machine, or, you know? So they basically convince a lot of rappers to
look. To DJ?
You know, no, not to DJ, but like, hey, get rid of your DJ.
Okay.
Because like this DJ is in every city you go to.
Yeah.
So like just have like, you know, like, because the DJ is like not really part of your show. So like now you've already separated the DJ and the MC.
Mm-hmm.
MCs feel like, well, yeah, why am I paying a DJ half of, you know what I'm saying, like of my fee, when I can just pay this guy, you know, $100, $200 and like, you know, be on to the next spot. And, you know, so like the role of the DJ in someone's stage show became diminished because people stopped respecting their own stage shows.
Yeah.
They let people talk them out of good stage shows. Like, but if you're only using your DJ to play just your beat,
yeah, you know,
then either you need a better show, you know what I'm saying? Or like you need to expand your library, you know, and like understand like what goes into a stage show. So like there are people now that have like, well, touring DJs instead of having part of your group. Where now, like, okay, like I'm not cutting my DJ into like my into the money that I make off the music. You know what I'm saying? I just cut them into, you know, what I get touring.
And so that'd be like a Who kid, right?
Yeah. And then that's why like a lot of times like the music starts to suffer, because like
you
have a DJ sitting in on your session, like how you know what's knocking? How you know what works? If your DJ isn't saying like, yeah, I would play this, or you don't have like, you know, your DJ, you know what I'm saying? Someone that understands what you're doing, so they can tell you, look, like this is what this sounds like, or this ain't gonna work. You need, you know what I'm saying? Like, you need that kind of person in your, not just on your team, but like, you know, on stage with you, like part of your process, because like we're the ones that actually play the music.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is the labels convince the rappers to just use the local rappers.
Use the local
DJs at the show. Yeah, the local DJs and pay them crumbs.
When you first started watching hip hop videos and everything, right? There was a DJ, there was dancers, right?
Yeah.
Hip hop is a party. And now,
now
it's just a guy walking back and forth, or it's a bunch of dudes on stage and like one guy walking back and forth. And they're yelling at a guy who you can tell has nothing to do with the other people on stage. How is
you
this?
I knew DJ and like the term like was diluted down when like I had an on-demand radio station, and then Coast to Coast like sent like a DJ. I was like, what the? I just do radio, and that's why I knew like they try to redefine. With a DJ, rappers, they don't have the scratching element either, too, which I can't stand it. I want to hear more scratching in the song.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when Guns N' Roses was new, right, and you would go to Axl Rose and be like, yo, we don't need Slash. They'd be like, what the fuck kind of rock group would this be without guitars? So think about it. In hip-hop, they managed to convince people to get rid of their bands.
Yeah.
Like, it's just you on stage? Like, what are you, fucking You know what I'm saying? Like it's some kind of musical, like a movie where like the music just plays out of the sky and like now you're rapping. Come on, bro.
A lot of sense. That kind of makes the performance weaker now because you don't got a DJ back there scratching and cutting up, which is really good. That could really scratch and cut real good too, man.
I mean, like, look, like I said, if you're going to a rock concert and like you don't see guitars, like you're like, well, what kind of rock concert is this? There's no guitars, there's no drums, or it's just, you know what I'm saying? Like what is this? But that's what they've done to the music now. So that's where the culture is.
What's your opinion of Run the Jewels? Because I heard a story about how they came together. LP's manager managed Killer Mike and said, hey, y'all need to get in a group together.
You asked me how Run the Jewels started?
Well, that's what I heard it was.
Oh, I don't really know.
What's your opinion of Run the Jewels, though?
What I think of the group?
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine you'd have to think I'd be pretty biased. Like, my friend is in the group.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But they're pretty amazing, too, though.
Yeah, I mean, bro, like, that group lasted as long or longer than Cold Flow.
That's crazy. Like, will we ever see another Company Flow album again, you think?
I don't know.
Has it ever been discussed?
I always say I'll never say no. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, one day I might be like, yo, you know what? I want to, like, let's, you know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's like, yo, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just do it. But, like, you know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, tomorrow's not promised, and you know what I'm saying? Like, everything's a question mark.
Now, how often do you, LP, and Big Just like stay in contact with each other?
You mean like all three of us talking?
Yeah. Well, just like you and them. Like, how often do you
I talk to those guys pretty often. I talk to them at least like once, twice a month.
Okay. Yeah, I know some people, man, they just like, they don't even. Some of these groups, they don't even talk to each other no more.
Yeah. I mean, well, also me, bro, like I don't keep enemies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and me and those guys is never enemies. So like it's gonna be a while before like I just cut them off.
Now, do you got any new projects that you're working on personally?
Yeah, I got this new thing I'm doing called Life in Dakota. I just did like over the spring going to summer, I did a record with Merce. Before that was a breakbeat record with the record called Store Run that has it's very familiar, you know, the quarter milk, stick of butter, loaf of bread. You know what I'm saying? Like it's, you hear it, Store Run. It's on Bandcamp, Life in Dakota Bandcamp. But yeah, there's that. And then I started doing stand up.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know.
How long you been doing that?
Stand up next week will be a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a nice little local comedy scene around here. I always used to when I stayed on the other side of town, every Monday I would go to this open mic with check out a lot of people coming in from like Raleigh area, Charlotte area, Durham. Of course I'm in Fayetteville, which we call Fayetteville. Y'all ever came through Fayetteville, North Carolina, back in the days?
We didn't really do the states too much.
Oh, y'all were overseas mainly?
Yeah, if we did the states, it was more like mainly like major markets, and even then, like not all the main ones. Like we didn't do Chicago until we reunited.
Oh man,
we never did Miami. We did like one show in Atlanta. We did the Bay, we did LA, and like, you know, we did like South by Southwest like once or twice. But yeah, like outside of that, bro, like everything was really like Europe, Canada, Japan.
Japan is really a good market, I heard. Now, you said something about Bandcamp. Now, right now, there's this movement of, a lot of people saying we need to go back to the direct to consumer because of streaming. Like, what's your opinion on all this?
My opinion on streaming?
Streaming and just going back to direct to consumer.
Well, I mean, for me, it's not, I'm never going back because, like, I never left. Like, most people are like, if you're getting something, a lot of times if you're getting something from me, very, very rarely am I in this, in that place where, like, it's super manufactured. Like, only just now with, like, the CoFlow merch is that, uh-huh. like, it's the only time, like, this is the only merch that's, like, actually not coming, through my hands. And that's just because, like, I couldn't handle those orders. You know what I'm saying? Like that was a lot. There's a lot that happened. Like, there's a lot, cause like we never really did merch like that. So like mm-hmm. when I started, to release merch, like people started to react to it. And I was like, yeah, there's no way I could handle any of these orders. So yeah, it's, that's pretty much it.
And have you put any of your music up on streaming platforms at all?
Some of it's up, but I don't miss it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
People are like, oh, you know, if you don't have it up there, people will never hear it. And I'm like, well, people ain't never listening to it. Like, if you go up, if you're on Spotify, most people are not going to Spotify to hear underground hip hop or like
you're right
to discover like, oh, let me discover this new group. Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's I'm going to Spotify because I heard, you know, Trey Songz got a new record out, Beyonce got a new record out. Those and that's why like most of the money is directed and funneled towards them. Am I missing the 200 people that might listen to it? You know what I'm saying? Because like clearly at that point it's not about the money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But like it's about the ears. And truthfully, like I get just as much with IG. You get just as much with TikTok.
Yeah.
If you decide to spend $5-$8 to promote it, you know what I'm saying? 3,000 people it'll definitely go across 3,000 people's eyes and ears. I don't know how that works with Spotify.
So you be on TikTok? I'm big with TikTok. I endorse TikTok heavily.
I'm like Life in Dakota is on TikTok. It's slow for me because like I'm not always on it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying like I get it, but like for me it's there's so much stuff to do in a day.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like most of the time, like I'm on IG or like I'm up here in the studio, like boom, you know what I'm saying? So like the like TikTok for me is like I have to remember to get on it, and it's like a job. You know? Whereas like IG is like click 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 click, put up a couple of pictures, boom, I'm done. You know?
Well. When I say I'm big on TikTok, I'm actually kind of referring more to the results you get, you know, like with breaking records, because they were able to break like that, you know, Bobby Caldwell.
Yeah.
So they were able to break that record again on TikTok, where most people didn't even know the dude was white. Everybody thought he was black until he came out and rebroke it. And they've been able to take a lot of old songs and re-break them on TikTok. And then it's just... Like, we just did a post today for a client, and we got, like, 8,000 views in the first hour. And, you know, those are really good numbers when you're not really advertising and whatnot.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm kind of big on TikTok. And I think, like, if they shut it down and ban it, I think the major labels are going to be screwed because they break artists but TikTok. Because labels don't know how to break artists, you know. They don't know how to do it.
They don't know how to break artists. They actually don't know how to find artists either.
Yep.
If you're going strictly by numbers, right, then you're not, mm-hmm. what are you listening to? You know what I'm saying? Because, like, last time I checked, like, no one listens to the numbers. Like, they actually listen to the actual, you know what I'm saying? Like, otherwise, like, you're just just be a mathematician. You know what I'm saying? Just play with numbers all day. But, like, we make music. So, like, it's gonna go back to the days where, like, you know, you're gonna have to find your people through the people, like through who they're listening to, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're in New York and like, you know, you want the Funk Master Flex people, like you got to make a Funk Master Flex record and like get the Flex or whatever he, you know, whatever his deal is that, you know, you handle that. But like, yeah, if TikTok goes out of business or whatever, you know, they shut it down. Like the fact that labels depend on social media is sad, because you're a major label. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have access. You have access to Billboard. Like, people are in their cars every day. You know what I'm saying? Jermaine Dupri used to have billboards in Atlanta. That's how people. You know what I'm saying? Oh yes, he's from Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? He becomes an Atlanta stable. He becomes an Atlanta institution. You know what I'm saying? So death. So like, you're trying to tell me that you're Universal Records, and you can't advertise your new pop artist.
And I think a big part of the numbers problem that ain't no lie. Well, that's a lie when it comes to. I know for a fact that 90% or more independent playlisters use bots.
Yeah.
And I would almost say it's probably around 90%. You know what I'm saying? Because playlisters, they don't have no influencer or Instagram influencer or YouTube influencer. They got zero, so they get plays if they have no influence. Bots. And it's crazy. They're literally going off of fake numbers. Like, they don't care about building fan base or anything of that nature anymore.
Yeah. I guess there's nothing to first of all, music is no longer tangible, right? So like,
yeah,
one of the reasons to make a good record is that money actually went into production of said record. So like, you can't waste your label's money. You know what I'm saying? Because like, essentially, like, it comes out of your own pocket. Like you got to pay that back. So like, you're gonna make a record that's worth being pressed, or so you think is worth being pressed. But now, think about this: J. Cole made a record called "Might Delete Later," and he deleted it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like you can't do that if your record's on vinyl. You can't do that if your record's pressed on cassette.
Yeah,
there's no might delete. Like no. There's no might delete. Your record's pressed. The record's out.
And he still wasn't totally able to go out there. So many people reacted to it, you know. And for my city, we were really upset about that because he's from Fayetteville, North Carolina. So that was a big disappointment for us.
Yeah, how did you feel when he apologized, though?
I was totally upset. I didn't get what are you apologizing for? I mean, like, you know, I don't think Kendrick and Cole would ever got as personal as Drake and Kendrick. You know, I don't think it would ever got there. I don't think Kendrick took it personal. And, you know, like, you just did a song where you said, like, you, Kendrick and Cole are top three. Like, you bigger than the Super Bowl. Like, you said you could be the GOAT. The group just bowed out, man. Like that, it's definitely not reflective of the Fayetteville mindset. We got this militant mind. I could tell you, anybody else that would have been in their shoes from Fayetteville, they wouldn't have backed down. It would have, they would have went all the way with it. You know, I think it made us look bad, man. To be honest with you, man,
I don't think it made y'all look bad. To me, it was a sucker move because he had a lot of time. So, like, when you finish a song in the studio, right, you trying to tell me, bro, can you finish this record and you didn't go back home and listen to it? You didn't take it to your people and play it and listen to it more than once, more than twice, 10, 15 times on your way. Like, you trying to tell me you drove home in your car or even on your bike, right, with your headphones in. And you didn't listen to it. You waited until the song was out right? And people didn't give you the response that you wanted. And then you was like, yo, I'm taking it back. My bad. What? Bro, stand on that, B.
I could tell you the city was going crazy.
Yeah, you said some shit in the song. And it's like, it was just song one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All you was doing, it was like when people play poker and they're like, yo, you put your money in. All you was doing, you put your money in. But then he was like, no, I gotta buy ICs. Like, what? Nigga, fuck out of here, bro.
I think what it made it worse for our city is the very first line he said was lights out like it's PWC. That's our electric company here in Fayetteville. So for us, we were like, yeah, he shouted out Fayetteville first, and then he walked it back, and then we was like, no.
It was a sucker move, like for somebody that, and it's not even about what he says about himself.
Yeah.
For someone that actually has talent. You know what I'm saying? Like you would want to see him use it boldly.
Yeah.
You know? So like I understand the disappointment. He definitely didn't make your city look bad though.
But we know, because this is the same guy that had a battle with Lil Pump. I guess you could call it a battle, and then interviewed Lil Pump afterwards.
Yeah, like he's a. It wouldn't surprise me if J. Cole was a hugger. Like, like after the fight, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's one of those. Okay, yeah. I actually interview a lot of bare knuckle fighters, and to be honest with you, a lot of those guys are huggers.
Yeah, but you know what? I'd much rather, like, after a bare knuckle fight, we need to be
hug friends. It out. Yeah,
we need to be friends because, like, those things are brutal.
Yeah. Those things are brutal. Yep. Well, before I let you go, man, any shout outs you want to do?
Man, but you know what? North Carolina, like I haven't been down there in a while. So like I still got family in Ahoskie and everybody in North Carolina. So.
You said where?
Ahoskie.
I ain't even heard of that. There's so many places in North Carolina you ain't even heard of.
Bro, that's I get country.
Yeah, it sounds about country. We got a lot of country spots, and we got our city spots, but we got a lot of country spots.
Yeah, I got family in Ahoskie, family in Charlotte. Yeah, man. Shout out North Carolina. I gotta make a trip.
Definitely. Well, if you do, let me know. I'll try to see if I can link up with you and Polly, man. So you're a friend of the show. So anytime you want to come on, please do, man. As soon as I get off here, I'm gonna start clipping up a bunch of clips, man. I try to clip up as many clips as I can and throw them out there into the universe.
You're talking shit about J. Cole. Let's get some shit viral.
Oh yeah, I'm not gonna, trust me, I'll clip it up. I ain't gonna hold back, man. like people know how I feel about the J. Cole situation. They know I'm like totally disappointed with him.
Yeah. Like I said, he didn't make the scene look bad. It was just like a weird move for a dude. Like bro, after you make a song, like if it wasn't in your spirit after you said it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it really looks like some sucker shit where like you waited until the song was out, you didn't get the reaction, and then you was like, man, I didn't mean it.
Well, some people say some of the inner circle like kind of pressured him and said, you gotta say something. I mean, because he said something first, really.
Yeah, which
but like when it wasn't doing a whole song, you know.
Right. It was like, yo, J. Cole said it.
Yeah.
He said it. And it was like, yo, like when you're that guy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He basically was like, yo, I'm whoever wanted, I'm smacking everybody. Like it sounded like J. Cole was about to be that dude. And like for me, like I've only encountered him like once, like in person, and he's a very like humble, nice guy. So to start something like it was like, oh. And like the song wasn't like super strong, but I was just like, okay, here we go. And then when you said when he walked it back, I was just like, oh, You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I didn't expect him to put a hit out on Kendrick. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought they were just going to be rapping back and forth, because, like, initially, that's what Kendrick started to do with everybody. And Drake made it perfect. Drake started bringing in all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Kendrick was like, hey, boom, a bomb on you. But, like, I believe that Kendrick and J. Cole would have, that the one chance for a hip hop to show his battle side
mainstream. That was it. That was it. Yeah.
In a mainstream, but like in a true lyrical context, that was the moment. That was the time for it to happen.
And he blew it.
J. Cole and Kendrick. And J. Cole was like, no. And then like, bro, like, first of all, like, no one thought what you said was like so crazy. Like, you supposed to say his songs are boring. Yeah. Because like, you were saying, like, you're not supposed to be like, I really respect your songs, bro. No. Like, you gotta diss them. You're supposed
to. Yeah.
That's just my take on it.
Yeah, it was supposed to be business, nothing personal, man. And it would have made for a way better battle.
Yeah. I honestly think, like, for my personal take, I think Kendrick, J. Cole, lyrically, would have been a more interesting and challenging for Kendrick. Yeah. Way more challenging, because, like, when you have to pull something out of the air and just I have to make myself sound better than you and convince people that I rap better than you. Like, that's the hard part. If all I'm doing is talking about, like, you know, like, your family, like, that's easy. That's the easy part. But when I start pulling apart the things you say and then flipping them, like, that is difficult. And, like, that is what Kendrick and J. Cole could have been. But, like, instead we got, you know, A minor, which is, you know what I mean? It's great. But, like, that's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, when people, like, out here screaming bars and all that, that's not bars. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the dissection of, like, well, he said this, and then, like, that's a triple entendre because he said it and then he showed it. Like, man, I don't care about, like, to the break of dawn. You know what I'm saying? LL said what he said. I knew exactly who he was talking about, and it was brutal. You know what I mean? But, like, Kendrick got it in him, but, like, he had to deal with the R&B kid, and then, like,
Drake ain't really a battle rapper anyways, man.
Like, he's a Canadian pop star.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was supposed to lose. A Canadian pop star in a rap battle with someone that actually makes hip-hop it was over for you from the start.
It's funny you said that, too, about him being a pop star, because I interviewed Chuck Clare, like, probably a week ago, and he said in Canada he's big as Celine Dion, who's pretty much a pop star.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm sure he has some records with him, but I haven't heard any records with Drake and Cardinal or Drake and Chuck Clare or Drake and Socrates. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man, to do the interview. I'm going to get off here and start clipping up some clips, man. Anytime you want to come back on, please do, man. And I'm going to stay in touch with you. I got your email. I do music reviews on Saturdays. So if you got any material, definitely love to review it, man.
Okay, dope.
All right, Mr. Lin, man. I appreciate it, man. You have a nice night, man.
Appreciate it, man. Stay up.
All right. Peace. All right,
peace.
Well, we ended the year off with a bang. Mr. Lin, Company Flow. We just did Chocolate. We just did Brother Jay. We just did Black C from RBL Posse. We just had Just Ice recently. Tomorrow we got Tia Love. And very interesting what he said about the Ruckus thing with them sending the Body Rock single over for them to promote. That's a no-no, man. That's definitely a slap in the face and disrespectful. Why would you expect another artist to promote another artist's music on tour, even if they are a label mate? It doesn't necessarily mean they're cool or they have a relationship or anything, but that I thought that was a head scratcher, and definitely interested to hear what he had to say about J. Cole, man. Like, definitely got to clip up a lot of that. He definitely agreed with me on it was just disappointing that Cole backed down. from that battle, man. He had a chance to make history and really solidify himself as probably one of the GOATs of all time, man. But I would say now, you know, I got to walk that back a little bit. Well, appreciate y'all tuning in another episode live for Vietnam, the one and only Paul Masson. Peace, and we out.